This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information and to find out how to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Marion Brown, Toronto, Canada. Country of the Pointed Firs. By Sarah Orne Jewett. Chapter 12, A Strange Sail. Except for a few stray guests, islanders were from the inland country to whom Mrs. Todd offered the hospitalities of a single meal. We were quite by ourselves all summer. And when there were signs of invasion late in July, and a certain Mrs. Fosdick appeared like a strange sail on the far horizon, I suffered much from apprehension. I had been living in the quaint little house with as much comfort and unconsciousness as if it were a larger body or a double shell, in whose simple convolutions Mrs. Todd and I had secreted ourselves, until some wandering hermit crab of a visitor marked the little spare room for her own. Perhaps now and then a castaway on a lonely desert island dreads the thought of being rescued. I heard of Mrs. Fosdick for the first time with a selfish sense of objection, but after all, I was still vacation tenant of the schoolhouse, where I could always be alone, and it was impossible not to sympathize with Mrs. Todd, who, in spite of some preliminary grumbling, was really delighted with the prospect of entertaining an old friend. For nearly a month, we received occasional news of Mrs. Fosdick, who seemed to be making a royal progress from house to house in the inland neighborhood after the fashion of Queen Elizabeth. One Sunday after another came and went, disappointing Mrs. Todd in the hope of seeing her guest at church and fixing the day for the great visit to begin. But Mrs. Fosdick was not ready to commit herself to a date. An assurance of sometime this week was not sufficiently definite from the free-footed housekeeper's point of view, and Mrs. Todd put aside all herb-gathering plans and went through the various stages of expectation, provocation, and despair. At last, she was ready to believe that Mrs. Fosdick must have forgotten her promise and returned to her home, which was vaguely said to be over Thompson way. But one evening, just as the supper table was cleared and readied up, and Mrs. Todd had put her large apron over her head and stepped forth for an evening stroll in the garden, the unexpected happened. She heard the sound of wheels and gave an excited cry to me as I sat by the window that Mrs. Fosdick was coming right up the street. She may not be considerate, but she's dreadful good company, said Mrs. Todd hastily, coming back a few steps from the neighborhood of the gate. No, she ain't a mite considerate, but there's a small lobster left over from your tea. Yes, it's a real mercy there's a lobster. Susan Fosdick might just as well have passed the compliment of coming an hour ago. Perhaps she has had her supper, I ventured to suggest, sharing the housekeeper's anxiety, and meekly considerate appetite for my own supper after a long expedition up the bay. There were so few emergencies of any sort at Dunnet Landing that this one appeared overwhelming. No, she rode way over from Nahum Brayton's place. I expect they were busy on the farm and couldn't spare the horse in proper season. You just lie out and set the tea kettle on again, dear, and drop in a good handful of chips. The fire's all alive. I'll take her right up to lay off her things, as she'll be occupied with explanations and getting her bonnet off, so you'll have plenty of time. She's one I shouldn't like to have find me unprepared. Mrs. Fosdick was already at the gate, and Mrs. Todd now turned with an air of complete surprise and delight to welcome her. "Why, Susan Fosdick!" I heard her exclaim in a fine, unhindered voice, as if she were calling across a field. "I come near giving of you up. I was afraid you'd gone and portioned out my visit to somebody else. I suppose you've been to supper." "Lord, no, I ain't, Almiry Todd," said Mrs. Fosdick cheerfully, as she turned, laden with bags and bundles, from making her adieu to the boy driver. "I ain't had a mite of supper, dear. I've been lotting all the way on a cup of the best tea of yourn, some of that oolong you keep in the little chest. I don't want none of your useful herbs." "I keep that tea for ministers' folks," gaily responded Mrs. Todd. "Come right in, Susan Fosdick. I declare if you ain't the same old sixpence." As they came up the walk together, laughing like girls, I fled full of cares to the kitchen to brighten the fire and be sure that the lobster, sole dependence of the late supper, was well out of reach of the cat. There proved to be fine reserves of wild raspberries and bread and butter, so that I regained my composure and waited impatiently for my own share of this illustrious visit to begin. There was an instant sense of high festivity in the evening air from the moment when our guest had so frankly commended the oolong tea. The great moment arrived. I was formally presented at the stair foot, and the two friends passed on to the kitchen, where I soon heard a hospitable clink of crockery and the brisk stirring of a teapot. I sat in my high-backed rocking chair by the window in the front room with an unreasonable feeling of being left out, like the child who stood at the gate in Hans Andersen's story. Mrs. Fosdick did not look at first sight like a person of great social gifts. She was a serious-looking little bit of an old woman, with a bird-like nod of the head. I had often been told that she was the best hand in the world to make the visit, as if to visit were the highest of vocations, and that everybody wished for her while few could get her, and I saw that Mrs. Todd felt a comfortable sense of distinction in being favored with the company of this eminent person, who knew just how. It was certainly true that Mrs. Fosdick gave both her hostess and me a warm feeling of enjoyment and expectation, as if she had the power of social suggestion to all neighboring minds. The two friends did not reappear for at least an hour. I could hear their busy voices, loud and low by turns, as they ranged from public to confidential topics. At last, Mrs. Todd kindly remembered me and returned, giving my door a ceremonious knock before she stepped in, with the small visitor in her wake. She reached behind her and took Mrs. Fosdick's hand as if she were young and bashful, and gave her a gentle pull forward. "There, I don't know whether you're going to take to each other or not. No, nobody can tell whether you'll suit each other, but I expect you'll get along some way, having both seen the world," said our affectionate hostess. "You can inform Miss Fosdick how we found the folks out to Green Island the other day. She's always been well acquainted with Mother. I'll slip out now and put away the supper things and set my bread to rise, if you'll both excuse me. You can come and keep me company when we get ready, either or both." And Mrs. Todd, large and amiable, disappeared and left us. Being furnished not only with a subject of conversation, but with a safe refuge in the kitchen in case of incompatibility, Mrs. Fosdick and I sat down, prepared to make the best of each other. I soon discovered that she, like many of the elder women of the coast, had spent a part of her life at sea, and was full of a good traveler's curiosity and enlightenment. By the time we thought it discreet to join our hostess, we were already sincere friends. You may speak of a visit setting in as well as the tides, and it was impossible, as Mrs. Todd whispered to me, not to be pleased at the way this visit was setting in. A new impulse and refreshing of the social currents and seldom visited bays of memory appeared to have begun. Mrs. Fosdick had been the mother of a large family of sons and daughters, sailors and sailors' wives, and most of them had died before her. I soon grew more or less acquainted with the histories of all their fortunes and misfortunes, and subjects of an intimate nature were no more withheld from my ears than if I had been a shell on the mantelpiece. Mrs. Fosdick was not without a touch of dignity and elegance. She was fashionable in her dress, but it was a curiously well-preserved provincial fashion of some years back. In a wider sphere, one might have called her a woman of the world, with her unexpected bits of modern knowledge. But Mrs. Todd's wisdom was an imitation of truth itself. She might belong to any age, like an idol of Theocritus, but while she was always understood, Mrs. Fosdick, that entertaining pilgrim, could not always understand Mrs. Todd. That very first evening, my friends plunged into a borderless sea of reminiscences and personal news. Mrs. Fosdick had been staying with a family who owned the farm where she was born, and she had visited every sunny knoll and shady field corner, but when she said that it might be for the last time, I detected in her tone something expectant of the contradiction which Mrs. Todd promptly offered. "Oh, my," said Mrs. Fosdick with sadness, "you may say what you like, but I am one of nine brothers and sisters, brought up on the old place, and we're all dead but me." "Your sister Daly ain't gone, is she?" "Why, no, Louisa ain't gone," Why, I never heard of that occurrence. Yes, and she passed away last October in Lynn. She had made her distant home in Vermont State, but she was making a visit to her youngest daughter. Louisa was the only one of my family whose funeral I wasn't able to attend, but 'twas a mere accident. All the rest of us were settled right about home. I thought it was very slack of him and Lynn not to fetch her to the old place, but when I came to hear about it, I learned that they'd recently put up a very elegant monument, and my sister Bailey was always great for show. She'd just been out to see the monument the week before she was taken down and admired it so much that they felt sure of her wishes. So she's really gone, and the funeral was up to Lynn? Repeated Mrs. Todd, as if to impress the sad fact upon her mind. She was some years younger than we be, too. I recollect the first day she ever came to school. 'Twas that first year mother sent me inshore to stay with Aunt Topham's folks and get my schooling. You fetched little Louisa to school one Monday morning in a pink dress and her long curls, and she sat between you and me and got crying after a while, so the teacher sent us home with her at recess. She was scared of seeing so many children about her. There was only her and me and brother John at home then. The older boys were to sea with father, and the rest of us wasn't born, explained Mrs. Fosdick. That next fall we all went to sea together. Mother was uncertain till the last minute, as one may say. The ship was waiting orders, but the baby that then was born just in time, and there was a long spell of extra bad weather. So mother got about again before they had to sail, and we all went. I remember my clothes were all left ashore in the east chamber in a basket, where mother took them out of my chest of drawers and left them ready to carry aboard. She didn't have nothing aboard of her own that she wanted to cut up for me, so when my dress wore out, she just put me in a spare suit of John's, jacket and trousers. I wasn't but 8 years old, and he was 'most 7 and large of his age. Quick as we made a port, she went right ashore and fitted me out pretty, but we was bound for the East Indies and didn't put in anywhere for a good while, so I had quite a spell of freedom. Mother made me new skirt long before I was growing, and I poked about the deck after that, real discouraged, feeling the hem at my heels every minute, as if youth was past and gone. I liked the trousers best. I used to climb the rigging with them and frighten mother till she said and vowed she'd never take me to sea again. I thought by the polite, absent-minded smile on Mrs. Todd's face, this was no new story. Little Louisa was a beautiful child. Yes, I always thought Louisa was very pretty, Mrs. Todd said. She was a dear little girl in those days. She favored your mother. The rest of you took after your father's folks. We did, certainly, agreed Mrs. Fosdick, rocking steadily. There, it does seem so pleasant to talk with an old acquaintance that knows what you know. I see so many of these new folks nowadays that seem to have neither past nor future. Conversation's got to have some gasoline. Old friends is always best, unless you can catch a new one that's fit to make an old one out of it, she said, and we gave an affectionate glance at each other while Mr.